Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't need to start at the local footy club or community centre. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend or family member, or a charity. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about, with no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it. You can confidently start fundraising right now, whether it's creative, local, or critical. Your cause matters. There's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Time is running out to take advantage of the Audi Open House Demonstrator Sale at Audi Centre Doncaster. For a limited time, enjoy impressive contributions across a wide range of Audi models. Receive $7,000 on the Audi Q7, $5,000 on the Audi Q5, and $3,000 on the Audi A3, plus 5 years scheduled servicing, but only until the end of the month. Visit Audi Centre Doncaster at 808 Doncaster Road or audicentredoncaster.com.au. T's and C's apply. LMCT 444.
Some dare call it conspiracy.
Welcome to the Some Dare Call It Conspiracy podcast, hosted by Brent Lee and Neil Sanders. After nearly 20 years exploring the world of conspiracy culture, we are taking our guests and listeners on a guided tour of the rabbit hole. Our mission? To discover where the truth lies.
Hey, initiates. Today, we begin our deep dive tour of one rabbit hole known as the Paul is Dead theory. Did Paul McCartney die in a car crash in 1966? And was he replaced by session musician and producer William Shepherd, as some have alleged? Let's see.
What's your favourite Beatles album, Brent?
Ooh, the White Album.
Really? Me, I'd have to say the best of the Beatles. That's my favourite Beatles album.
Which one? The red one or the blue one?
Oh, don't complicate things. No, actually, yeah. I think possibly Sgt. Pepper, but that's because that was one that was introduced to me when I was young. Like, were you a fan of the Beatles?
I was, yeah. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, from a young age as well. My stepfather used to have this really big record collection, and when my mum started dating him, we'd go and like stay over, and I just would like go through his record collection when I was like 10, 11 years old. It would put these massive headphones on that had the extension cord that was like, it went throughout the entire house, must have been like 30 feet or something, you know, the coiled one.
Yeah.
But I'd sit up all night and like just listen to records, and the Beatles had such a huge discography. It was one that I was able to just like kind of go through and all of their discography and David Bowie. And that's kind of where like I fell in love with music and telling stories through songs and stuff like that. Like, yeah, man, I was a huge fan.
Yeah. I was a fan of the films, actually. The Hard Day's Night and Help. I was really used to love
They were funny, Help. Man.
Yes, they were funny. That's the thing that really endeared me to the Beatles, was that they had a sort of genuine comic timing. Like, they were really charming in interviews and stuff like that. And it just seeped through their music, didn't it? The cheeky chappies and whatnot. Obviously, you know, Lennon was a little bit more hard-edged. And there's stuff in his background that, but, you know, no one's perfect. So as people can probably deduce from the fact that we're talking about the Beatles, today we're going to be talking, and we're going to be doing a deep dive into a classic conspiracy theory. That's right, the Loch Ness Monster. No, we're not. We're gonna look to see, was Paul McCartney replaced? Did Paul McCartney die in a tragic accident, and was he replaced by a double or a lookalike?
I think we should call this The Great Replacement Story. No, not that one. The one about the walrus.
Nice. I like that. Yes. Yes. Very good. So,
right.
What we're going to be doing is we're going to be examining a book, a bit like when we did the Turner Diaries. I sat down and read through an entire book, and we're going to use that as a sort of as a jumping off position. So, you know, let's synergize. Anyway, the book that we're looking at.
I got a question.
Yo.
Yeah, I got a question though. Like, because I was thinking about this today. Is this a conspiracy theory that you were actually into when you were a conspiracy theorist?
Never. No. No. In fact,
no. Me neither.
I was asked about this on Richard D. Hall's show on Rich Planet. He asked me he was asking about Hollow Earth and Paul McCartney. I was like, I'm familiar with him. I could tell you a little bit about him, but no, I don't believe it for a second. And like the rationale that everyone used to use, that at the time it seemed kind of plausible, but the, like looking back, it's like, oh, that's silly, is that, well, they replaced the dog on Blue Peter so as to not upset the kids and didn't tell anyone about it. Yes. So why wouldn't they do that with Paul McCartney? And it's like, well, for all sorts of reasons. But fundamentally, one, because he's not a dog. Like, you know, like, if you imagine if they did that but didn't tell the rest of the Beatles, you know, like if, like in some scenario where like, oh, fuck, I've accidentally killed their pet, I'll just get a new one and hope that they don't notice. Like, yeah. But so there was this book that came out, because this theory has been going since the 60s. It was starting in the 60s, and we will go into the origin of this theory and all the sort of iterations of it as we go through. But the long and short is that Paul McCartney supposedly died, and for whatever reasons, people weren't initially told about this, but the Beatles themselves decided to leave a series of clues, and this was through artwork and in the music, some in sort of like lyrics that could be interpreted in certain ways, some hidden messages that were backwards, recorded backwards onto records, and that sort of thing. And a few years ago, a book came out which was called The Memoirs of Billy Shears. And if I'm brutally honest, we're not looking at the actual Memoirs of Billy Shears. That book runs to 666 pages.
Oh.
Yeah, in 66 exciting, rip-roaring roller coaster chapters.
66 chapters, like, first of all. Yeah. That's a lot of damn chapters. And
it's a lot of chapters. Some of the chapters... Well, some of the chapters don't really need to be there. There's quite a bit of repetition, if I'm really honest. I did start to go through it and go, we've already fucking talked about this, for crying out loud. But, you know, on the other hand, it is a great story that needs to be told. So this book came out, and what it purports to be. Were you aware of the Memoirs of Billy Shears when it came out?
Not at all.
No, you weren't. Okay, right. Oh, this will all be new to you. So the book came out, and it purports to be written by the person who replaced Paul McCartney.
Oh.
Or it's his, it's not, it's through the lens of the actual, you know, person who produced this book, Thomas Earhart, I think is his name. And, but basically what happened is, apparently Paul McCartney approached this guy, said, I know that, like, we're total strangers and everything, but I feel that, like, I really should tell you something. I'm not the real Paul McCartney. Let me tell you the entire story of how I replaced him many, many years ago. And then you can write it down and put it out in a book, and then the public can finally know about this. And which obviously raises the question, why doesn't Paul McCartney do that? Because he's quite famous, and so could probably get an audience to at least listen to him. But that's not really discussed. Anyway, so the book is called The Memoirs of Billy Shears, and we're looking at the Billy's Back version. And we're going to do something completely shameless here. Throughout this, there's going to be several pictures that you need to look at. So the first two pictures are the front cover of The Memoirs of Billy Shears and the front cover of the Billy's Back version. If you go to our website, www.somedarecallitconspiracy.com and go to the Paul McCartney bit, you can follow along with all the photographs that are going to be vital for listening to this particular podcast. And whilst you're there, if you're feeling generous and you want to sign up for the Patreon, where you get loads of free episodes of Twats and all sorts of stuff that people don't get, including advert-free listeners to episodes, then please feel free. So anyway, these are the covers of the book. And there are a few people that basically are real sort of proponents of this. Two people that are huge proponents of the Paul is dead theory are so a couple of people that I used to know. Nice guys. Mark Devlin and Mike Williams. Do you know either of Mark or Mike?
I know Mark, but I don't think I know Mike.
Mike's into Beatles stuff. He was interested in sort of Manson stuff. He's latterly a flat earther. And Mark Devlin is into the satanic music industry, the Illuminati in the music industry. And he's also more recently a flat earther. And they're big fans of this book. So this was an interview that they conducted discussing the book. Mark says, after hearing you on a previous podcast, Mike, which is the one you did with Sophia Smallstrom last month, the information that you presented absolutely blew me away. And I decided that £33 or not, I had to splash out and get this book. Oh, so yeah, the book is £33. It's got 66 chapters, and there are in total 666 pages, which some people have deemed as significant. Others have seen it as like a marketing strategy, but let's not get bogged down yet. So, £33 or not, I had to splash out and get this book, and I'm very glad that I did. I mean, talk about a page turner and a world changer that you can't put down. It's quite an incredible book. Maybe you just want to recap on what this book purports to be. And so this is Mike. Mike says, okay, so this book is purportedly written by, it's written by a fellow by the name of Thomas E. U. Harriot, but the book is written in the first person by a person by the name of Bill Shepherd or William Shepherd. William Shepherd claims to be Paul McCartney, that Paul McCartney passed away on September the 11th, 1966. So you get in this book, Mark, it's essentially the person that has been playing Paul McCartney for 50 years, explaining how the whole thing went down. So this book is 666 pages in depth, and it states that the Beatles were, and still are, a Tavistock project, that the Beatles are an occult Masonic creation, and that virtually all of the Beatles songs post-September the 11th, 1966, after biological Paul's death, contain Paul is dead clues. And the book is loaded with references and statements with regard to occult origins and underpinnings with regards to how the whole thing has proceeded. It's called Paulism. So if you think of Paulism, think of it as a kind of mysticism. It's the occult. And I will even go so far as to say, because he kind of weaves it in, Bill Shepherd does in the book, Satanism. So it has a lot of connections back to Aleister Crowley's mysticism and magic and so on. And there's a part of the book that is very dark for people who are not accustomed to these types of things and have not looked at this research. But those underpinnings are definitely there. So that's what the book is about in a nutshell. And Mark Devlin responds, so I think you, if I've got it correct, you were a Paul is dead denier. And you used to think that this idea that McCartney could have been replaced was ridiculous. But now you're a true believer. So is it the book that swayed you? And Mike Williams responds, it was this book. I was aware of the clues growing up, and I did acknowledge changes in Paul's appearance, but I always chalked it up to maybe plastic surgery. Biological Paul was in a car accident and surgery was required. And I also asked myself, how could this be suppressed? In other words, there were band members and other band friends and so on that were dealing with this person on a day-to-day basis. So how was it possible that nothing was ever said? So I was down that path. So in essence, I was rationalizing some of the things that didn't make sense to me. And I also assumed that maybe there were body doubles and lookalikes used because, hey, it's show business. And although some people may disagree with this, I did get one email where somebody did disagree, But the Beatles were a boy band, a 1960s boy band. And if you want to have proof of that, all you need to do is look at the screaming teenage ladies that were in the audience. At the very least, I was thinking that, boy, he really jumped in bed with the ruling class. That was my thought of Paul McCartney. You know, it's going through this. Right. So anyway, so that those are some of the things that culminated over the time. Even then, I was still falling back on how could this be a secret for so long? Somebody would have to call it out. And then I read this book. And then you understand the reasons why nobody called it out. And the reason is because everybody who was somebody knew. So Mike Williams didn't believe in the conspiracy theory that Paul McCartney died in 1966 and was replaced by a lookalike until he read this book. So this book, pretty damn impressive by the sounds of it. Okay. So, yeah, isn't it? Like, you know, so Mark, who previously believed, but he feels that this book filled in some of the gaps and, like, explained it even further. And he loves this. He says, exactly. And the book answers so many questions that people have, you know, before I read this book, people would say to me the whole time when I was, whenever I raised this subject, how could they keep it a secret for so long? How were his family in on it? How did they get all the other musicians at the time to cooperate? How did he learn to play the bass left-handed when he was right-handed? You know, how did he have the same musical talent? How could he sound so much like him? And this book answers all of those questions. You know, but obviously the challenge for the reader is trying to assimilate those parts of the book which represent disclosure. You know, Billy, fall as in fake Paul, F-A-U-L, is sometimes a nickname to indicate that somebody is talking about the fact that Paul McCartney was replaced. Getting his story off his chest and differentiating between those parts which are pure fictional embellishment so that the book can be passed off as fiction. Because we have, on one hand, this book presented to us as the memoirs of Billy Shears, his autobiography. And on the other hand, we're told that it's a novel. It's a work of fiction, a work of creation. So it does tend to muddy the waters somewhat in terms of working out which parts fall where. So did you catch that? This book has been released as fiction, but the conspiracy crowd know that this is actually sort of a clever way of Paul being able to, or Billy, should I say, being able to get this information into the public domain. Because if he just, you know, came out as Paul McCartney and went on the news and said, I've got something to tell you. I was replaced. I'm really Billy Shepherd. I replaced the original Paul, 40, 50 years ago now? I'm very sorry. But on the other hand, I did give you wings. So come on. Like, but no, that wouldn't be on. So he has to do it in this elaborate way by basically getting somebody to put it out as fiction, but actually including all the truth. But then some of the bits in there are lies, but you won't know which because you don't know. Anyway, Mike goes on to say, in the last chapter, he does go into which pieces are fiction, but even then, when you get to the last chapter of the book, which is chapter 66, I was still left with, okay, I'm not even sure that even chapter 66 is being quite honest. Because as an example, he says in chapter 66 that he's not into numbers. He's not into 666 and all that stuff. And that was part of the fiction. And I thought to myself, well, that's not truthful because as a Mason, oh yeah, by the way, he was a very high level Mason, Billy Shepherd, the guy that replaced Paul McCartney. So it's got everything. It's got Satanism. It's got the Tavistock industry. It's got Paul McCartney is dead. It's got connections to the Illuminati music industry. This book explains absolutely everything. And in such a way that it convinced certainly Mike that this is a plausible and real explanation for the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's why I'm really, really interested in this. Because like I said earlier today, I was thinking about this and this was no chunk of my belief system because I felt like it didn't tie into any of that stuff.
Right.
So okay. I want to see how
they've tied it in.
Like, yeah. I am so interested.
You might be somewhere this way. but let's just crack on. So anyway, he says, So he's a high-level Mason, which he clearly states in the book, and that's what he is, and that's how he got there. So there's no way that numbers are meaningless. But it's a very interesting book in the sense that I would say that knowing what I know about the Beatles, because I've read so many books over the year, Mark, that from a historical perspective, it was right on the money. And then once he got into all the details, and these were details in the book that only somebody who was there would know, and that's what got to me. It was just an enormous amount of detail that he got into. Do you see the potential problem with what Mike said there? What convinced me was that he was right on the money, the details. The details in the book that only somebody who was there would know. Well, Mike wasn't there. With all the greatest due respect, Mike, you weren't there. Right. So how would you know if these details that only somebody who was there would know are accurate? Anyway, so Mark was convinced. I mean, he believed in the theory before because he'd looked and he'd seen all the clues that were in Beatles albums. He'd looked at the sort of clues in certain songs. But this really crystallized it for him. And Mark says he dissects many famous Beatles songs and tells you what the lyrics really mean. And it's very plausible to me. That's right. I mean, that's what I got out of it. So he was breaking down the songs and he breaks down a lot of songs and he gives the true meaning of the songs versus what we were left to interpret it as. And Mike responds, and that's what struck me also, Mark, was his explanation of these songs put into the context of what he's presenting into the book. It made sense to me. So I didn't look at any of those songs and say, well, that's a stretch. So according to the author, basically what happened was Paul McCartney, Thomas Harriot, was sat on a beach in California, and Paul McCartney sort of sat down next to him, felt that the vibes were good, and so decided to unload his story onto Thomas Harriot, explained that he was Billy Shepherd, a session musician called Billy Shepherd. And in 1966, he was given the opportunity to become Paul McCartney because Paul McCartney had sadly died in a tragic car accident. And so just think about that. What would you do if Paul McCartney, you know, from the Beatles, sat down next to you on a, you know, deserted beach in California and leant over and said, look, I know you don't know me, mate, right? Okay, but I'm not really Paul McCartney and haven't been for some time. In fact, I've never been Paul McCartney.
First, does he look like Paul McCartney?
Well, obviously,
Paul McCartney that comes up to me, yeah?
Yeah, it's Paul McCartney. He's been Paul McCartney since the 60s. How he changed from looking like he looked to how looking like Paul McCartney is explained in the book, and we'll get into that later. So it's Paul McCartney. It's essentially Paul McCartney. Okay. And he comes up to you and, you know, he says, hello, I'm Paul McCartney. See, that's forensically perfect, that, right? Hello, I'm Paul McCartney. And then explains his story. I won't do that impression for the whole thing because it's so accurate that people will be even more confused. They'll be like, is that really Paul McCartney? Like, so he's been replaced again. Exactly.
Neil Sanders has been replaced with Paul McCartney.
Oh, that'd be a good conspiracy. But Paul McCartney, who is just Paul McCartney, married to Linda McCartney, you know, did Glastonbury or whatever. He just turns up, sits down next to you and says, I know you probably think I'm Paul McCartney. You recognize me from off the telly and that, but oh God, I've got this dreadful secret to tell you. I replaced Paul McCartney in 1966. I was a session musician called Billy Shepherd.
I would be thinking, shit, Paul McCartney really did do a lot of acid.
Yeah, possibly. It's the same thing. What I enjoy about it is that Thomas Harriot, according to the book, just basically took this all in his stride and just went, right, well, it's obvious that I need to write a book. You know, essentially you're going to write it, but dictate it to me and I'll put it out. And in that way, we can obviously, you know, make the public aware of this because I just can't think of another way that Paul McCartney could have got a message out to the public other than through the medium of Thomas Harriot. So it's lucky he was there really. But anyway, now also throughout the book, there's this thing called encoding. And what this basically means is that certain words or letters on a page have been highlighted, Like they're all in sort of like in bold text, and it's pissing annoying because it makes it really difficult to read. And apparently these are supposed to sort of like give a second level of messaging through it. So for example, on the contents page, the highlighted, this four highlighted letters, right? There's a P, an A, a U, and an L. And I don't know whether you've noticed, but that spells Paul, which is spooky. And then on the next page is highlighted words, and it makes the sentence, Paul and I reveal it all. I know. And then on the next page, it says, on page one, it says, the highlighted words are, everything was made possible because Paul had me, William Shepherd. I am that I am. Yeah. Now, right, okay. It's a pretty clever book, in as much as it's very clearly been on quite a lot of Paul is Dead message boards, and they've read quite a lot of Beatle trivia to give it an air of authenticity. So it's pretty good, but there are problems. Now, one of the things that people say shows that this is authentic is that it is published by Pepper's Press, which is a subsidiary of Macca Corp, M-A-C-C-A. And basically some people have said, well, this proves it. This is obviously Paul McCartney's official publisher. That's a clue that it's definitely Paul McCartney doing it. And again, this is something that we're going to run up with throughout the entire thing. But like, there seems to be a sort of schism between like wanting to let people know and not wanting to let people know. So there's a clue there that it's Paul McCartney. It's like, again, just fucking Paul McCartney, just tell people. There's no need to do this. Anyway, the problem is, and I've heard many people say that it's definitely real, Macca Corp, this is Paul McCartney's official publishing house, all his biographies go through them. They don't. It's not true. It's not real. The company isn't real. It has no company's house reference. It's a totally made up company, basically, to give credibility to the idea that the memoir is real, basically. Like, it's just totally real. But Mike Williams, has thoughts on this. We should also take note on the way that they published this book, or the way that Thomas published the book. It was very low key. It was unassuming. They use CreateSpace, which is an independent publishing platform with Amazon. So it didn't even go through a major publishing company. So that was another way, in my view, to put it out there, but not have all this fanfare. So in other words, if a major publisher that put out the book, that book would have sold like hotcakes. And Mark says, yes. And so the whole thing would have just gotten to the point where mainstream media would be all over it. Oprah would be wanting to do stories on it. It would have crashed into the mainstream that way. But it seems like steps were taken to deliberately prevent that process from taking place. So what they're saying is that Paul McCartney put this out, and obviously he could have like put it out in a major way so that everyone would know about it, and it would be a huge story, and everyone would have talked about it, and the book would have sold lots, and that would have been happy days. But they didn't do that. What they did instead was they self-published it through Amazon's Safe Space, almost as if it was just some guy on the internet. So there's two ways of looking at this, right? Okay. Either Paul McCartney, with all the money and options that Paul McCartney has, decided to put it out really quietly on this sort of Amazon self-publishing thing so that it would drip, drip, drip into the public. It wouldn't go rushing too soon because, I mean, what would happen if everyone found out? Which would beg the question, then why are you telling anybody? But like, whatever. Okay. Or alternatively, it's a made-up story that some guy self-published.
And that's, you know, the end of the episode.
Yeah, so, you know, thanks everyone. Right, so, this is it. So, in 1966, following a controversial tour of Germany, Japan and the Philippines, and a tour of the US, which was plagued with backlash due to John Lennon's comments that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus, the Beatles ceased performing live due to being fed up with touring, and they became a studio-only band. Their last commercial performance was at San Francisco's Candlestick Park on the 29th of August, It was a constant in 1966. It marked the end of a 4-year period dominated by almost non-stop touring that included over 1,400 concert appearances internationally. The group made no more public appearances until the 30th of January 1969, when they performed an unannounced rooftop concert at their Apple Corps headquarters in London. So, what the book postulates is that the reason that the Beatles stopped performing live was because Paul McCartney died. Mm. And by the way, this book came out in 2009. So it's like, it's getting on. It's like, what's that? Nearly, woo, that's what, 17 years?
17
ago?
Years.
Yeah. So fair enough.
Hey, thanks for listening to Some Dare Call It Conspiracy with Brent Lee and Neil Sanders. Join us next week for the next installment of our Paul is Dead deep dive series. If you'd like to skip ahead and hear all 14 episodes of the series right now, please consider joining us at www.patreon.com/somedarecallitconspiracy, where you can also listen to over 20 unreleased episodes of our now Patreon exclusive series, The World According to Some, aka TWATS. Until next time.